Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're going all the way back to 1878.
Ooh, what are we diving into today?
We're tackling a Supreme Court case, Reynolds v. United States.
Okay, I'm intrigued already. What's Reynolds all about?
Polygamy, religious freedom, and a legal showdown that's still making waves today.
Wow, I can see why you picked this one. Sounds pretty intense.
It is. And our sources are, get this, the actual Supreme Court opinions from the case, the majority opinion, and a concurring opinion.
So we're going straight to the source, huh?
Absolutely. And trust me, these documents are way more captivating than you might think.
You know, it always amazes me how these cases from over a century ago still shape how we view things like, well, the balance between what we believe and the law.
It really is mind-blowing. But before we get lost in the legal arguments, let's set the scene.
Okay, take me back to 1878.
Picture this. Post-Civil War America. The country's rebuilding, things are changing, and the Mormon Church, a pretty new religious movement at the time, is practicing polygamy.
Polygamy, that's having multiple spouses, right?
That's right. And as you can imagine, that practice clashed with federal law. Big time. And that's where Reynolds v. United States comes in.
So the government wasn't too happy about this polygamy thing, I take it.
Not really. It was a huge point of contention. The Mormon Church was facing a ton of pressure to abandon the practice. But in this case, we have George Reynolds, a Mormon man who's charged with bigamy for having multiple wives.
Ah, so that's where the case kicks off.
Exactly. Now, Reynolds argued his second marriage was, well, a religious duty. Protected, he claimed, by the First Amendment's guarantee of religious freedom.
Whoa, so this wasn't just about marriage, was it? It's a head-on collision between individual religious freedom and the government's power to regulate what people do.
You got it. It raised a huge question. Can someone break the law if they sincerely believe their religion demands it?
I see where this is going. That's a question with some serious implications.
Exactly. And to grapple with it, the Supreme Court dug into some pretty complex legal territory. In their majority opinion, they actually laid out six key points they considered.
6 points? That's quite a list.
It was. They covered everything from how the indictment was put together and how the jury was picked to whether evidence from a previous trial could be used.
Okay, so they really went through it all. But I'm guessing the main event was that clash between religious freedom and, you know, having to follow the law.
You're right on the money. So let's dive into the court's reasoning, particularly in that majority opinion. They didn't just say yes or no to Reynolds' claim. They went deep. And in doing so, they set some crucial legal principles.
Okay, I'm ready to get into the nitty-gritty. What kind of principles are we talking about?
Well, one of the biggest takeaways was their distinction between religious belief and religious practice. They said the government can't tell you what to believe, but they can regulate what you do.
Even if what you do is based on your beliefs.
Even then. Especially if those actions break the law or could harm society.
Oh, so that's where the line gets drawn.
Exactly. And the court was very clear about this.
How so? Did they say something specific?
They did. They said, and I'm quoting here, to permit this would be to make the professed doctrines of religious belief superior to the law of the land, and in effect, to permit every citizen to become a law unto himself. Pretty powerful stuff, right?
Wow, that's a strong statement. I can see why that stuck around, but wouldn't that lead to, well, chaos, if everyone just followed their own beliefs?
That's exactly the point the court was making.
Yeah.
Government could exist only in name under such circumstances, they added.
So they're basically saying that having laws means we can't always act on every belief, even if it feels deeply important to us. It's about finding that balance, right?
Exactly. And they even used historical examples to drive the point home.
Oh, like what?
Well, they brought up things like human sacrifice and sat in the practice of burning widows on their husbands' funeral pyres.
Those are some heavy examples. And I guess both were often justified by religious beliefs.
Right. They were using these practices to illustrate the potential dangers if religious belief could override the law in every single case.
It definitely makes you stop and think, like a warning about what could happen. So where did the court ultimately land on Reynolds?
They upheld his conviction. While Reynolds was free to believe in polygamy, he couldn't actually practice it without facing the legal consequences. They were basically saying the government has a right, a legitimate interest, in regulating certain actions, even if they're rooted in religious belief.
So even with that concurring opinion we mentioned earlier, all the justices agreed on that fundamental point, that the government can sometimes restrict actions based on religious belief.
That's right. Even Justice Field, who wrote the concurring opinion, agreed with the overall decision. He just had a different take on a specific technical point about using a witness's earlier testimony in the trial.
Ah, so even when they agree on the big picture, there can be these little legal wrinkles they disagree on. Fascinating.
Isn't it? These nuances are always so interesting to me. Want a quick rundown of Justice Field's objection?
Definitely. I'm curious about how these seemingly small details can actually make a difference.
Well, Justice Field was basically saying that a witness's previous testimony should only be allowed as evidence if they can't testify in the current trial. And if the defendant had a chance to question them, you know, cross-examine them, during that earlier testimony.
So just saying the witness is gone isn't good enough.
Not for Justice Field. He wanted solid proof that their absence wasn't due to some shady maneuver by the prosecution.
So even though he thought Reynolds was guilty, he was sticking to his guns about ensuring a fair trial. Like he was saying, let's do this right, even if we're sure about the outcome.
Exactly. His disagreement wasn't about the big question of religious freedom versus the law, but about making sure things were fair and by the book.
It's like attention to detail matters, even or maybe especially when the stakes are high.
You know what else I found fascinating? The court later had to deal with a sentencing error in Reynolds' case. It seems like such a small thing compared to these huge constitutional questions.
It does, but it shows how important it is to get the legal process right, down to the smallest detail. It's not just about reaching a certain verdict. It's about doing so fairly and according to the law, every step of the way. It really shows how crucial it is to follow those legal procedures to a T. It's not just about, you know, getting to a particular result. It's about making sure you get there fairly within the bounds of the law.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've dug into the historical context, that clash between Reynolds' religious duty argument and federal law. We've even touched on some of those finer legal points. But I'm curious about the broader impact. What kind of lasting impact did Reynolds v. United States have on the legal world? What kind of precedent did it set?
Well, this case had a huge impact. It basically established this idea, this principle, that the government can sometimes regulate actions, even when those actions come from deeply held, sincere religious beliefs.
So it's not a free pass to just break the law because your religion tells you to.
Exactly. The court drew a line in the sand saying that religious freedom, while essential, of course isn't limitless. It can't be completely absolute. Has to be weighed against other things society cares about, like public safety, keeping order.
That sounds like a tricky balance to strike. How do we even decide where that line should be?
That's the million-dollar question, right? It's a question that's still being debated, still going to court even today. Reynolds v. United States didn't lay out a simple formula, but it did give us a way to start thinking about these tough issues. A framework.
Interesting. So how has that framework worked in practice? Have there been other cases after Reynolds where the court had to deal with this balancing act, religious freedom versus, well, the needs of society?
Absolutely. Reynolds comes up all the time in cases dealing with all sorts of religious practices. Like think about the use of peyote in Native American ceremonies or exemptions from vaccine mandates. It's become like a cornerstone for navigating that tension between freely exercising your religion and the government's power to, you know, make rules for the common good.
Wow. It's pretty amazing to think that a case from way back in 1878 is still so important to us today. It really speaks to the lasting power of these legal precedents and to how challenging it is to balance individual rights with, well, with what society needs as a whole.
It also shows us that the law is always evolving, right? It responds to new challenges, new interpretations. Reynolds gave us that initial framework, but the details of how it gets applied are always being re-examined, redefined.
This deep dive has been incredibly illuminating. We've covered so much ground, the history of polygamy in the Mormon Church, the ins and outs of legal arguments, and the legacy of this landmark Supreme Court decision.
We've looked at the court's reasoning, gone into detail on those concurring opinions, even dug into some of the procedural aspects, showing how important fairness and accuracy are in these legal proceedings.
You know, after all this, I feel like I have a much deeper understanding of how religious freedom is protected and limited in the United States. But I still have one question that keeps coming back to me.
I'm listening. What's on your mind?
We've talked about how Reynolds established that religious freedom isn't absolute, that the government can step in and regulate actions even if they're based on sincere religious beliefs, especially if those actions break the law or could harm others.
Right. That's the core principle we've been unpacking.
But how do we decide where that line is? Where does religious freedom stop and the government's interest in, well, in protecting society start? seems like such a gray area.
You've hit the nail on the head. That's the real challenge. It's a constant balancing act, weighing different interests, trying to figure out what the consequences might be. There's no easy answer, no one-size-fits-all solution.
So it's less about drawing a hard line and more about finding the right balance. Constantly reevaluating, adapting our understanding of religious freedom as new challenges come up, new perspectives emerge.
You got it. It's an ongoing process, a dialogue, that requires us to grapple with the complexities of religious freedom and to do it thoughtfully, responsibly. And that's what makes this whole case so interesting, so relevant even today.
I'm with you there. This deep dive has been quite a journey. We started with this seemingly simple case about polygamy and ended up talking about, well, the very foundation of our society.
And that's what I love about these deep dives. You never know where the conversation will take you, but one thing's for sure, we've given our listeners a lot to chew on today, a lot to think about. We definitely have. This has been a really insightful look at a truly landmark case. But before we completely wrap things up, we do have one final thought to leave you with.
We spent this whole episode unpacking Reynolds v. United States, a case that's really taken us on a journey through history, legal principles, those big questions about religious freedom and the government's role. But before we sign off, we do have one final thought to leave you with. But first, let's sum up the key takeaway. What's the one thing you hope our listeners really walk away with?
I think it's that precedent that Reynolds set, you know, the idea that the government can actually regulate certain practices, even if they're based on sincerely held religious beliefs. It's like religious freedom is fundamental. It's a right, but it's not a blank check. There are limits.
Right. Especially when those practices clash with other things, society values, or could even harm others.
Exactly. The court was acknowledging that the government shouldn't interfere with what people believe, but it can step in when it comes to actions, especially if those actions are breaking the law or messing with public order. And that tension, finding that balance between religious freedom and, you know, keeping society running smoothly, that's something we're still dealing with today.
It's definitely not just some abstract concept either. Think about all the debates we have today about religious exemptions for businesses, vaccinations, even things like discrimination. This case, from way back in 1878, it's still a part of those conversations.
Totally. Reynolds didn't give us like a step-by-step guide for resolving those conflicts, but it did provide a framework for how to approach them. And courts, legal experts, they're still using that framework today as new issues pop up and new interpretations come along.
It shows us how the law is this living thing, right?
Yeah.
Always changing as society and our values change. And Reynolds v. United States, even though it's over a century old, it's still shaping how we understand religious freedom and those limits.
We've explored a lot today, but it's really just scratching the surface of this really complex issue. So we want to leave you with the final question to think about, something that builds on everything we've been discussing.
Okay, lay it on me. Hit me with that thought-provoking question.
How do we, as a society, balance protecting religious freedom with the need to maintain order and make sure we're protecting individual rights? It's a question that touches on so many of the hot-button issues today, from religious exemptions to laws affecting LGBTQ plus rights.
It's a huge question, no doubt. But one we all need to be thinking about as we, you know, navigate this world that's always changing.
It means considering different points of view, weighing competing interests. And in the end, trying to build a society that respects both individual freedoms and the common good.
It's been amazing exploring this case. We started with this seemingly straightforward question about polygamy and ended up talking about the very core of our society.
That's the magic of the deep dive. You dig deep, find those connections, and hopefully get our listeners excited to keep exploring these ideas on their own.
If our listeners are interested in going deeper, where should they start? Any recommendations for resources?
There's so much information out there, online, in libraries. I'd say start by reading the full text of the Reynolds v. United States decision itself. You can find it on legal databases, even on the Supreme Court's website. And then branch out, see what articles, books are out there that analyze the case and talk about its impact on later court decisions.
And don't shy away from those contemporary issues, those tougher topics. Look into how Reynolds has been used in cases about religious exemptions, discrimination, all those hot-button issues.
Remember, engaging with these tough questions, that's how we learn and grow both as individuals and as a society. It's about trying to understand, even when there are no easy answers.
This deep dive has definitely made me want to learn more. Time to hit the books and keep exploring.
It's been a pleasure diving deep with you. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. Keep those minds active.
And remember, knowledge is power, but understanding, That's everything.